whoever was there finishing up would take a good handful of the best heads of the corn, you know, and you go home and tie a ribbon around them, and they were supposed to be the Nellie, the real Nellie itself, that was not the function, but this would be hanging up in the, over it, hanging up from out to the summer, on the above the mantelpiece, somewhere in the kitchen, just as that, this happened of corn had to come home every year. And the, what was over, the sheep had to go to the church or chapel or wherever it was to help in the decorations. The last sheep of corn, but you always pick the good sheep if you could, you know. Nice corn. And then there was a nice ribbon, a bow ribbon, any colour you like, so that was a bow ribbon. I hang it up. Generally on these big old-fashioned dresses with open, you know, the big kitchen dresses. Jenny hooked it on one of the hooks up there and tied the dresser, and after this, I remember staying up till Sunday.
And would that be when the corn was cut with a sickle or with a scythe? Or
oh, well, I never remember the sickles, but I remember scythe and a little reaper.
Mm.
And no matter how you cut it, as long as it was cut, the but last sheep of corn.
Which farm do you remember them doing this?
Which farm?
Hmm.
Oh, in Ballycrink, where I was raised.
In Baldwin?
In Baldwin, yes.
And then they would have their melia, would they, their harvest supper?
Had the harvest supper. You'd have, that night you'd have extra tea, you know, extra good tea provided, and a glass of, big jug of ale were on the table, anybody that wanted to eat, have a drink. But then that wasn't the big melia. The big melia was in the barn, and then there'd be all the young ones round about being invited for dance. That's a great big melia. They were all the farms around, the young people, anybody that liked to come, they were all invited to come. And it could be a great dance going on over. It's a great night, the melia night.
What did they have to provide music?
Well, it was on the fiddle, somebody playing a fiddle and dancing and all that kind of thing. Mouth organs, anything at all. But it wouldn't be a fiddle, it wouldn't be anything more than that.
Would Philly the Desert come to those
days? Yes, Philly
days?
Was out too.
Was he?
Oh, I, Philly used to come in the old days. Philly the Desert, and was another player. What was his name? Matt Begg. He was the blacksmith in Baldwin. He used to come. Matt Kane's name, real name was, called him Matt Begg. Because everybody gone go by a nickname in them days.
Did he used to play a fiddle?
He played a fiddle, and Philly the Desert would tell yarns, you know. All kinds of yarns, both fairies and, well, I didn't know the big shanty ones, but every amusing them. Philly used to tell us all the time he'd get on the bush and he'd lie by heads. He'd waking up and he'd find himself and the fairies all dancing down. And one time he found himself down at the cemetery, bottom cemetery steps. He was lying there and they took the shoes and stockings off him, he said. And the little fellas was coming all dressed in a nice red coat and all dancing around him. And when he wakened up in the morning, he'd be on the bush, you see, and then he was asleep there. They didn't really believe in these fairies, so they believed in them. They'd meet this person and they would talk to them, tell them something. Something you want them to go and do for them that they hadn't done before they died. Ask this person to go and do it for them. They would tell you whether that was truth. I sometimes think that there must have been something in it.
And they believed in signs too, didn't they?
Oh, signs. Yes, if there's a person sick in the house and you were supposed to go past, and one man said he met a funeral and on the going past this house and met the funeral coming and he had to stay in the hedge and let the crowd go past. And about a week after that, this man in the house died, and that was the funeral, the very way that he was supposed to see it that night.
Work. It's all he had, a shed there, just over there, a bit there. There was no blacksmith shop in my day either. I knew the old fellow, there was supposed to be a blacksmith, no?
Mm.
But he was working in Port St. Mary. It appeared he had the anvil and a few things in Clenish.
Mm-hmm.
He did a little bit of farming too, you know. But he'd be a very old man, mind you. There's an old man close to here, just over there a bit. He's called Neddy Humray.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great man, that. He'd be about 80 years when I knew him. And he got too old for going to sea. He and the other fellas started talking about him. He's a great man, and how he got to Falkirk's name was, he got in with Milner.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about Milner, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know Milner's Tower.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Milner was only visitor that come to Port Erin, them days. Milner was bringing his men over from the safe works and giving them a holiday in Port Erin. And I believe Milner had something to do with building the Falcon's Nest. That was the only house I was on there. But at that time, when I was going down from the airport, it wasn't as good as Clevenish. There wasn't a house. There wasn't one house from the Falcon's Nest up along to the bladder. You know, that is all cornfields right up, and they started to build the Bellevue Hotel.
What did you get mostly?
All sorts of. Of course, I hadn't time, but the fish was bait on the bottom and so on. It was fly fishing over there. Fly fishing, you know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
It was dry, a bait. You'd put a rod bait on it that long, and you'd draw it on the top of the water. Get pollock, you know, big pollock, 15-pound weight.
Mm.
Yes.
It would be pretty bad coming in sometimes, wouldn't it, Mr. Lowe?
Yes, have a bad time, but we weren't going, although we'd take the ocean sometimes, we'd go in bad night long. We'd say there'd be shelter here and shelter there, and there wouldn't be shelter at all. It wouldn't be bad. There's no place to play with at all around the Sound here, you know. the man that was on the calf, he's the owner of the calf, said to me one day, I was carting stuff to Port St. Mary from him. He said to me, I'm going to leave the calf, he said, by November. I was thinking about you, he said. You're the sort of man for the cow, he said. You've been well fishing. I know you see your patient around here, he said. And you're a good boatman. Now he said, ask your father. See if he's allowed to take a cow. I'd want 100 a year. That's the rent, he said. So I asked my father, and my father said, yes, it'd be all right. I'd be on the calf, and he'd be this side, you see. Well, that's all right. I wasn't much scared about it for a while. And then she'd be, I believe it's in May, June. He died He died in the village in Port Smelly. He's on his way to the south. He'd been seeing his father. His father's an old colonel. He lived in Castletown. And he was coming over after being dying with his father and so on. And could have got in Port Smelly and the station master found him dead. More steam, you know. See the ship going on the sail.
Mm.
And he got in a storm out there. And they come in, drifting in towards the land here. And the lightkeepers, those lightkeepers on the car that time, they were telling them, pointing out the way, home, where to go and where to go. But however, he got in and stuck on the end of Kittle. And all the crew, the ship was on, they had to was a narrow beach channel coming in, cutting the, and the crew had to jump from here, there to get on the land, mainland, you know. And the skipper, give her a little cabin boy. And he took him under his arm. And the crew was got over all right. And my word, the skipper was unlucky. He fell in. Lost the boy and him and himself and all.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of them. And the crew, the were on the kettle and only for a day or more, took them a long time to get them out. And I remember the time when they started to unload the ship. She didn't break up at all. Got men a week or two after, and they got men, but brought men there to discharge the ship, just loaded with gunpowder. And 30 or 40 men there, and right, Simley? And my boy, she exploded. There wasn't a bit of her left. 30 men was killed.
Yeah, terrible thing, wasn't it?
Yes.
They never knew really what happened, did they?
No, but they were surmising that the fellas, during that week she was on, those poachers were looking for things, you know. Looking for things amongst the cargo, and they left a candle or something. Left a candle lit in. Because the ship was all right in the morning when the men came to work, but they were letting this one wasn't burnt down. And that's the end of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were passing. I ploughed a lot of them up. I was ploughing in a field right down at the sound. And I got boned and things came up. And I said to my father, what's this been? Oh, he said, that's part of the Brigadier, he said. The police put it down. They gathered up as many bits of them as they could, you know, but they blew such a long way off.
Mm.
Some of them blew up here.
Mm.
Right. And, well, was to tell the people that he found any bones of arms and legs to bury them. That's what they were doing.
Before the new road was made, that was the way up, up to the chapel here. And the way came across the road at the Hackett at Skinscope, up over in Ballymore Field, in cross in front of Ballymore House, and up through the yard. And that couldn't be stopped anyway. Skinscope's got a right of way there. Always had. You see, that new road, as we cut north by, it's not that awfully long built. I don't know how many years, but I ought to know too. Of course, it's before my time. And there's another right of way to where you used to live there, down through over that stile. And that is to that farm though. But that's all. There's not a right of way for the public, only to that farm.
Well, don't you think the one through the Ballymore was for the Balearic people in general though?
The right of way? Well, it seemed to have been. But I'm not so certain about it, but they took the case to court and they got it pushed through that there was a right of way.
When was that?
It's not many years since. Clearly's time, let's see. It must have been. No, I'm wrong. It was bought by Woods. It's in Woods' time, when Woods bought it. Well, that's not so long since.
No. And they still use it, don't they?
The people? Yes. But we were there 9 years, to be correct. And no one ever asked us permission to go up through. They all took it for granted there was a right of way.
They would.
But there is an established right of way now. But there's the right of way police is there too. Up that road from the bottom up, you know. But it's not on record. But still it's been in use so very long. And they were couldn't stop it now.
And what about this road? Is there a right of way through to Agnes?
Yes, for pedestrians. But I'm not so sure for vehicles.
Well, a vehicle couldn't get through, could it?
They could get through. Well, not perhaps to Agnes. I'm not so sure about that now.
Was this a miner's road at one time?
Miner's road, I suppose it was. There's an easement up at the top of this road I've been telling you about before. And I remember that being walled in, hedged in.
Do you?
And yes. And at one corner of it, the southwest corner, there's a well. You're talking about wells. Well, there's a well there yet.
What's it called?
Now I cannot tell you that, but it would be the Crat Rye well, I should think. Well, you remember Johnny Cowell, as we called him? Well, his father fell the hedge round about and took the land in to his field and enlarged his field to that extent. And I'd like if you would see that bit though, because I'm so sure of it. And the well is there. And it was in use for a long time, well, many, many years, until a few years ago, one of Bob Quill's cattle got into it and couldn't get out.
So I think it has been shut up since that.
The capital of the parish centre, obviously.
Yes. To inspect the buildings that were unsightly. And wait a minute. I was asked to put a value on them. So there was one down on your father's and grandfather's road there on Ballymore Road. And there was no one living in it, and it was getting out of order. So I had given account of it. So I put a value on it in my own way, and I was only a young fellow to value houses, and it was in bad repair, very, very bad repair. So I valued it at £30. And then I went down to Mr. James, and I told him that I was supposed to value these old ruins. And I valued this at £30. What do you think, I said, about it now? Well, he said, that's enough for it. That's all right. He agreed that the value wasn't so bad. But then there was another one just outside of Balmore Farmhouse. I don't know whether it's there now or not. Thatched. Is it there still?
I think it is.
They used to keep potatoes in it. Well, I wasn't supposed to condemn a thatched house if it was thatched properly, but a tumble-down galvanized one was very unsightly. So I was sent round on that job. And that's how we commenced to talk about this Mother Crane's old house, it is, you know,
yes.
Mother Crane's, £5. Well, it was done up from time to time, and John knew all about it, far, far better than I did. And
what did they do with the ones they condemned, Mr. Maddow?
Oh, well, they'll be pulled down.
Were they?
Oh, I think so, yes. There's a lot of houses, you know, that used to be on the Larrack here. I can show you the old sites of them that's not seen now, of course. There's the Crop Rye up there, we remember people living in it, of course. And it's only a outhouse now. Now, John told me something about this house down below here.
My mother was at the dressmaker's and had to wait for her dresses as long, being late, was going to take her usual cross-cut home. The dressmaker told her not to go cross as the place was infested with fairies at that time of night. But she didn't believe such things. And when getting into the first field, there stood three little men dressed like sailors. They didn't say anything, nor did she. They kept walking at an angle of her, so when she came to the river with only a plank of wood to cross on, and always heard fairies never cross water, she didn't expect to see them. But when she got across there, they were before her. She remembered her grandfather telling her to sing, if ever she got among fairies, to sing Jesu the name high over all, in hell and earth and sky. Angels and men before him fall, and devils fear and fly. And sure enough, they disappeared as she sang it. That's a true story my mother told me. My mother, Mrs. Collister of Willow Grove Bridge.
Are you, is it going now?
Yes.
I don't hear a sound of it.
Oh, it's all right, though.
They used to be an old man living in this house, then more so the glen, quail, better known as Bill Nick. And he used to keep white hares. And he was letting them out every day, and they were going grazing up the side of Carron. The Kelly Mullahasness owned Carron, and they were boating men, and they often came with big greyhounds for to catch the old man's hares. The hares naturally were running for home, and there was a little window in the gable, and they used to jump in through this little window by the side of the chalock in the turf corner. And old Bill would be going to the hares when they got into the corner, and he'd be stroking them, but he was speaking in Manx, he wouldn't be speaking in English, and he was saying, "Thou art safe, boys, thou art safe. I'm glad to see thee. They'll not come another inch. They daren't come another inch. I'll see to that. They daren't come another inch." And, right. There's an old story connected with Belliscalia. I've often heard my father tell it, and he was one of the Belliscalias. He was telling about the Penaudry that used to come at nights to do the thrashing, to do various jobs. And one story in particular that's outstanding in my mind was one stormy night that Grandfather Quayley, was my grandfather, said to the Penaudrys, William, he was calling, he said to the Penaudry, "I think, William," he said, "we're going to get snow. There's going to be a snowstorm. And I would like you to go and gather snapple." And he gave him a supper, and away goes the Penaudry, and he gathered all the sheep in. And in the early hours of the morning, he was calling, "Am I going too fast?" He was calling upstairs to Grandfather Quail, "I've got the sheep all gathered. They're all in the cribs, but there was one Loughlin one I couldn't get her in." And Grandfather Quail said to his men in the morning, "You had better go up to the cribs, boys, and see what William has got." And the men went up to the cribs, and lo and behold, he had a big brown fully grown hare in among the sheep.
What will I say? When I was a child, I used to love to sit on our barn steps and read a book called Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And I could always imagine her going over the ice with the child. And I've read it times and times. And another book I was very fond of was The Life of General Gordon.
When did you read that?
Oh, later years when I read it.
And you've always been fond of reading, haven't you?
Yes. I've always been fond of reading, but I like to read. I don't like these modern books. I like the old books.
What other books did you have when you were a child?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that now, could I? Because we got them every year, didn't we, from the summer school?
Mm.
I don't know. school. And we left Balclutterick at 8 o'clock in the morning. And we had, it took us an hour to get to Arbery School. And we were never known to be late.
What time did you get back?
And we left there at 4 and we'll be back at 5. And it never killed me. And I'm fairly good to walk yet. And that was a long way, you know.
Yes, it'd be several miles, wouldn't it?
Oh,